Morning, Judy. How are you?
Hi, Anthony. I'm very well, thank you.
That's good. You've recently been to Coffs Harbour?
Yes, I've had a wonderful week, and that included 3 days at Coffs Harbour with some beautiful people. And had lawyers speaking and other activists, or two other doctors as well from AMPS, the Australian Medical Professional Society, you know, just giving us the full picture of the psychological warfare that has been inflicted on the population, you know, and how they created this illusion that we're actually in a pandemic.
Yeah, it's been extraordinary, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. And it's just, it's a behavioural psychology, you know, and this collaboration with mainstream media, you know, the big tech companies, you know, to suppress any opposition to, you know, the lies that have been told to the public by the government.
Yeah, the funny thing is that, you know, when you look around at the moment, people think it's over.
This is it, yes. When the opposite is true, they've actually now put all the infrastructure in place and they're just fine-tuning. And so the next step will be with respect to the World Health Organization and the new amendments that they're putting through with respect to the international health regulations. Mm. So, yes, sadly, we are in George Orwell times, and everything they've told us is the other way around. The opposite is true, and they've managed to create this illusion because the government has not been made accountable and there's no transparency, and the only way to do that is if you have an independent media. And, of course, our media was captured by corporations over the last two decades, and that's where the problem is. So that, in effect, means that reality can be turned upside down because the lies get told, and it's the framing of these lies, the framing to say that it's in the community good to do the right thing. And when you call a drug a vaccine, that's very seductive, and it was easy to coerce people into taking a drug that everybody knows has side effects when they're untested. So that, you know, they've turned the world upside down, and people need to recognise this. You know,
it's like being a slow creep, hasn't it?
It's a slow creep, and there's actually a word for this, Anthony. It's called the Hegelian dialectic.
Yes.
And it's the way in which they turn morals upside down through incremental changes that they make over, you know, a period of time. And if you notice, see, all the medical ethical guidelines that doctors were required to abide by were all violated. You know, bodily autonomy and choice for individuals with respect to medications, which is your fundamental principle because of our genetics. And I'm just going to emphasise this point because listeners need to understand that just because you have a gene for something, it doesn't mean it will ever be expressed in your lifetime. It is the environmental factors, the chemicals, you know, that you're exposed to during your lifetime that can switch that gene on, or it can lie dormant for all of your life. And that big lie and the fact that they allowed our bodily autonomy to be removed is a destruction of humanity. But it's a very serious thing. This is a real attack on humanity itself.
Absolutely. I'm guessing that at your rally there was probably no media coverage.
No, but we had a professional photographer there, so all the talks were filmed and we'll be putting them out shortly.
Maybe if you had some rainbow flags there, you might have got coverage.
That's it. You know, there's certain agendas that are being pushed, you know, for various reasons. And, with the vaccination issue, this has all been about bullying. And
totally.
Very sadly, people are being told that it wasn't bullying, you see. People are being told to believe that because they supposedly did the right thing and took the drug, and that this drug was essential to the entire population, there's this false belief in everybody. They've been convinced that, oh no, that's not bullying. And, you know, this is really sad because the people that were coerced into that drug, and also the people that were removed from society from that bullying, the mental health of these people is through the roof. But, you know, workplaces are now having bullying workshops, and the one thing you're not allowed to mention is that you were coerced into having a drug or that you were removed from society.
Yeah.
That's not recognised. It's not being acknowledged. And this is where society can't heal until the lies that have been told and the framing is completely exposed for what it is, which is the right thing to do is for people to have choice in all medications because of their genetics and to actually call this an untested drug, not a vaccine, because it was never tested before it was put into the community further than 2 months
in
a trial that was aborted.
I think the saddest thing is the families that ostracised family members.
This is it, Anthony. Right across Australia, we're all suffering the same thing. There's friends that we've lost because we were ostracised. There's family that we've lost because the government ran a campaign through the media to say, Beware, be scared of your unvaccinated friends and family at Christmas. Do not invite them to Christmas.
Mm.
I know families that are still suffering from that. They have not mended from that ostracism.
Yeah.
It's called, I've learned what it's called, Anthony, it's cancel culture.
Yeah.
Similar to what happened in apartheid in South Africa. And, Australian society has huge mental health issues right across the country, and families can't mend until it is acknowledged that this what was presented to the public as a COVID vaccine was nothing of the sort. It was an untested genetic technology, modified messenger RNA technology that's never been used successfully in humans or animals to prevent any disease, and wasn't even tested to see if it could prevent the disease.
Mm.
Yet it was promoted to the public as a vaccine that would prevent you getting COVID-19 disease. They were the words.
Mm.
And
safe and effective.
Safe and effective. How can an untested drug or a drug that's only been tested for 2 months be claimed to be safe and effective?
Mm.
The majority of people know, and all doctors will back this up, every drug has effects in the body that can come out months or years and even decades after that drug enters the body, because it takes time to interfere with all the body systems.
Mm.
Certain things change. It's not going to always be within the first 24 hours or 48 hours. So that's the other lie that the government and the medical profession, collaborated with, was to claim that all side effects would come out immediately and they are rare.
Mm.
I heard Christine McCartney say that on the ABC.
Mm.
And this is the lie, the lies that we have to have exposed.
Well, they've just voted to not investigate excess deaths in Australia.
That's right. And, so it's a clear indication that they're not protecting population health with their policies. And I'll explain, even further, the strongest evidence we have that they never were protecting population health in vaccination policies, because the Therapeutic Goods Administration is 100% funded by the pharmaceutical companies whose drugs are being approved and the government.
Mm.
So it's approximately 97% by the pharmaceutical companies, and the rest is funded by the government, who has mandated these drugs that they call vaccines in the population. Now, if you've got a regulator that's 100% funded by the companies that approve the drugs, and that regulator also has the role of monitoring the safety of those drugs in the population, that's not a body that can protect human health.
Mm.
That is a clear indication that they've set up a drug regulator to protect industry's interests in government policy. That's a crime.
And this is a group of drug companies that are not liable for their product.
Absolutely. In 1986, and this is what most Australians and around the world people don't know, is that the pharmaceutical companies were paying out millions of dollars in compensation to vaccine-injured children and adults, that in 1986 they went to the US government and asked for indemnity for any drug that they put on the market and called a vaccine. And Ronald Reagan passed that act and removed all liability. So they're not responsible for any harm caused to the population from any drug that they call a vaccine.
I don't know too many organisations that are exempt from liability for their product.
Yes, yeah. Well, there's that as well, and there's now all the conflicts of interest in government that enable these drugs to be put on the national immunisation program. One of the biggest conflicts of interest I found, other than the TGA itself, was appointing Professor Terry Nolan as the chair of the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation. In 2005. So that's Australia's Vaccine Advisory Board, whereby the chair recommends directly to the health minister what vaccines should be put onto the National Immunisation Program. Now, Terry Nolan, for 15 years prior to that appointment in 2005, was the head of the Murdoch Children's Research Institute's largest vaccine research and development program in Australia. Mm. And so that was set up in 1990. So can you see the timeline there, Anthony?
Yeah, totally.
In 1986, Ronald Reagan removes any liability for any drug that you call a vaccine, and they don't have to provide proof, Anthony, that these drugs are safe and effective. They just say they're safe and effective and have been tested for 10 years. Mm. And as you can see, wasn't the case with COVID, and I can assure you it wasn't the case with HPV and many totally. Of the others on the schedule. Mm. So, you know, then they set up Australia's largest vaccine research and development program at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute.
And is that the same Murdoch that runs the media?
That's correct. Murdoch has approximately 80% of our media now. So that collaboration, that's where governments no longer can be made accountable. And they're not being transparent in any of their processes.
Mm.
And so that's how we've reached the stage that we're at with this, tyranny, medical tyranny, mm. that's being promoted by the government.
And it's not just Australia. This is a worldwide thing, isn't it?
That's right. So this is where I think a lot of people had trouble trying to accept these explanations. But that's where my research. You know, I also, when I went to university, it didn't occur to me to look at global health policy because a principle of a public health policy is that it must be designed by the government in each country with respect to their own environment, their own lifestyle characteristics and genetics of the population and healthcare quality. So, you know, I went to university to see what controlled infectious diseases and just as I was thinking that I was finished my PhD in 2014, we had it assessed by the examiners and they said, oh, no, you must include these global health policies. And that's where I learned about the Gavi Alliance, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations, which is a board behind the World Health Organization. So, you know, here we are all thinking that our health policies are being designed by the World Health Organization that has a charter to use independent objective science. But in 1999, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation set up this other board called the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, the Gavi Alliance, and it includes the Federation of Pharmaceutical Companies, it includes the biotechnology companies, it included the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. So you see, that body connects.
Pretty powerful, isn't it?
Very powerful. It connects the politics with the economics. And you see, a public health policy that governments have jurisdiction over never involved drugs and medications. It's not in their jurisdiction to. But this was a very subtle merger of vaccines into public health policies controlled by the government to a point where now the government has claimed it's got the power to remove our right to choose any of these drugs, but they're not medical doctors.
Mm.
And you see, public health is preventative health, and with changes to economic and political decisions, you can improve the environment and lifestyle of the population and healthcare quality. And it's those things that the government was always in charge of with any public health policy. But once the Gavi Alliance was set up in 1999 and this idea of global health policies, the international health regulations of 2005, all WHO member countries signed up to them, you see. And it was in those international health regulations that they had the pandemic preparedness plans that used mathematical models, not empirical science, not evidence of people dying in all countries. They used a mathematical model to call pandemics, you know.
Well, and didn't they also change the definition of what pandemic is?
That's right. In 2009, so just before they called the swine flu pandemic, they changed the definition in May 2009. And I'm glad you brought that up because it's a critical part of what we're dealing with. All of this is medical fraud. Mm. And you'd call it pseudoscience, you see, because when they changed the definition of a pandemic, they removed the need for there to be enormous numbers of deaths and illnesses.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, that's the risk of any disease. The risk of any disease is being hospitalized or dying from the disease. Cases of a disease, they knew from 1950 onward that the cases of the disease, they're your natural infections, and if you're not hospitalized or dying from it, in a developed country, once the environment was improved, those cases were either asymptomatic, no symptoms, or they were very mild and people got better. And the benefit of that natural infection was long-term immunity. You see, that's where the herd immunity came from.
Mm.
But, and so by removing that word, that the need for there to be enormous numbers of deaths and illnesses to call a pandemic, it meant that they could test for a virus in the population. And this is where they turned science on its head. And they'd suddenly told people, oh, no, if you've got the virus, you're an asymptomatic case of disease and therefore a risk to society.
Yeah.
Now, the World Health Organization has admitted that's not true. They have no evidence for that whatsoever, and of course it's not. We've lived on this earth for millions of years, and people without symptoms are healthy people. That's the correct way to frame it. We're not at risk to each other because these organisms, microorganism germs, they don't become pathogenic unless there's a poor terrain. You need a poor environment, either, you know, run-down nutrition or lack of hygiene, sanitation. So nobody is a risk to anybody else, and this is where we must educate people, because that was one of the biggest lies. Well, they're the two biggest lies that were told in that last pandemic. One, that we would have no natural immunity if we're exposed to this new coronavirus, and two, that an asymptomatic person could be considered a case of disease.
Yeah.
They are both lies, and people need to not be fearful of any any virus or bacteria.
I've mentioned a few times on this podcast the book Dissolving Illusions, and anyone that's trying to tell me what the situation is, I say, well, how's about you read that, and then we can have an adult discussion.
That's right, but you see, and I understand where people are coming from. In chapter 4 of my book, or my research, I described heuristics, the framing of information and the way in which people make decisions on all of these political issues that we're trying to deal with. Because of all the mis and disinformation that's out there, and because people lead busy lives, and many aren't even interested in trying to weigh up, the information on both sides of a scientific argument, they have to use a rule of thumb. And that rule of thumb is trust the experts.
Yeah, that's right.
In this case, the government has spent three decades telling people that the expert is the medical doctor. Now, that's actually not true. The public health experts, because this a vaccination policy should be a public health policy, but this was a planned because the medical practitioners are being educated with pharmaceutical funding. And that means that the studies and the information they're provided with is different to the body of medical literature that I was able to assess as a public health researcher.
Mm.
And this is where the problem is. The indoctrination of the public has been one that the doctor is the medical expert that knows about the control of infectious diseases, when I can promise you they have not been taught about the history of the control of infectious diseases, nor have they been taught much about nutrition and preventative medicine. Allopathic medicine has now become simply, largely, you know, solutions through drugs and surgery. And the indoctrination of the public has also, with the media, you'll notice that they're now claiming that vaccines controlled infectious diseases and that we need all of these vaccines that they've developed to remain healthy. And that's the opposite is true. The majority of the adult population has not had one or, that has mostly had only one or two vaccines in their lifetime, if that. But the young people, because of the education through the school curriculums and because of the doctor's education, that history's been rewritten. And they're not hearing the fact that these vaccines were brought in after the risk of these diseases were removed in 1950 in all developed countries. So, you know, without a media to get to the public and without an education system that is independent of, you know, corporate interests and pharmaceutical interests, then we have trouble, we're going to have trouble saving humanity from the attack that we're in.
You mentioned your book, Vaccination, which essentially, as you say, it's your PhD. What led you down that path?
Yes, well, that's interesting. I always wonder what was it in me that alerted me that something wasn't quite right about these vaccines. And I started teaching high school science in 1986. And that's an interesting timeline when you think about what actually happened in 1986, even though I didn't know at the time. So I was in the schools for about 4 or 5 years before we suddenly saw a huge increase in the anaphylaxis, the ADHD, the allergies and celiac disease and speech delay and a lot of other neurological reactions, seizures, convulsions, things like that. They skyrocketed, and I looked at the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, and literally over that decade from 1990 to 2000, there was a fivefold increase in chronic illnesses in children. And I started having my own children in the early 90s. So I was exposed to this huge vaccination program, which I hadn't myself had most of those vaccines. But just prior to that, actually, in 1990, all teachers were told they would need to have a hepatitis B vaccine. And, you know, I guess it's my logical mind, but I sort of looked in the environment and looked in the newspapers and I couldn't see any extra risk for hepatitis B. And I'm thinking, well, why am I having this drug? Why am I getting this injection? So I decided not to have it. But I was one of the few people in the school that made that decision, because most people believe that these vaccines don't have side effects, and that's a lie. All drugs have side effects, and your genetics determines how you will react to any drug. So I did see multiple sclerosis appear in a couple of teachers, and also chronic fatigue syndrome and other little things like that. But as I said, through the 90s, there was this significant increase in sickness in children. So by 2004, I decided to go back to university and find out, you know, what controlled infectious diseases, because, you know, I wouldn't have felt confident speaking up if I didn't know what did control the diseases. And, you know, and so I wanted to know for my own children, should I be vaccinating? Because, of course, I started vaccinating my children.
Well, most mums,
that's where the journey began.
Most mums do as their mums tell them and just go to the clinic and get the vaccine done. And here's you. Well, I might just do a PhD on it.
Yeah,
you're probably the only mum in Australia that's done that.
Possibly. Well, and I do wonder what would have happened if I hadn't done that research, because there's so many people reaching out to me now saying thank you. They're very grateful. It's opened up the literature to so many people. And I knew when I wrote my PhD, it needed to be put in terms that most people could understand. So that's what I did, and then in March 2020, by that time, I actually was already putting it into a book format, and I had several doctors and health professionals writing the foreword of my book, and it actually became available to people in March 2020, and it's titled Vaccination, Australia's Loss of Health Freedom. And if you remember, it was March 2020 when everybody was being locked up in their houses.
Yes, it was perfect timing.
When there was nothing in their environment that indicated there was any disease outbreak whatsoever.
Yeah, and the interesting thing also is that since you finished your PhD and wrote that book, you've been copying it left, right, and centre.
Copying it? You mean reprinting it?
No, no. You've been subject to ridicule.
Oh, no, that started as soon as I attempted to debate my research. So around 2009, my journey started with a Master of Science in 2004. And, you know, I went to several conferences so that, and by in 2008, I was over here in Perth and I was able to present my research at the Australian Health Promotion Conference. That was in 2009, actually. And this was all when I was, the papers I presented were questioning of the flu vaccine for children, because they were running trials over here in 2008 to give this yet another vaccine to children. They were already getting 12, which meant 24 doses in the first year of life. Mm. And children aren't at serious risk of flu. This is a fact, that the majority of children aren't at serious risk of flu. And I looked up the Cochrane database on the meta-analysis for the vaccine, and it said it was no more effective than placebo for children and adults. You know, and this is the sort of information, it doesn't get to the public because only industry-funded research is being promoted in the corporate-sponsored media. And in 2009, I was still able to present my research at conferences. But as I got more vocal in community talks in 2010, a couple of things happened. Firstly, the Australian Skeptics and the Friends of Science in Medicine. These two organisations, one of them's the Australian Skeptics is pretending to be a grassroots movement to remove pseudoscience on political issues. So they say on their website, you know, that they're influencing public behaviour to remove pseudoscience. And, of course, it's the opposite is what they're doing. They're promoting corporate interests in government policy. And this, it was the Australian Skeptics that literally started to attack me on the internet. They've got many websites where they just ridicule and denigrate. And I was immediately labelled this anti-vaxxer, which, of course, is name-calling and bullying. Mm. There's no scientific debate happening. They're just suppressing people with denigration. And that's when I first experienced all of that, and the website was alight. I learned a lot about these Australian Skeptics because literally they use industry funding, industry-funded scientists at their meetings. And then the general public that turn up, you know, they hear this biased information and they're told to go out and promote it to their friends and family, which is what happens. And they're not a scientific organisation, by the way. So they just use industry-funded scientists to get their message out. And then there was the Friends of Science in Medicine, who have more power because they are a scientific organisation, but they're funded by the pharmaceutical companies. So all of this, the industry lobby groups in Australia were very powerful. And, of course, when my PhD was published on the university website in January 2016, the Australian newspaper allowed journalists who have no knowledge of vaccination. Plus, there are, you know, doctors that were part of the Australian Skeptics groups. They were allowed to put in their opinion of my PhD, and they just denigrated it as anti-vaccination and conspiracy theories, even though it's a piece of academic information that is fully supported with all the evidence. But because the public uses this rule of thumb, believe the experts, you know, and they don't have time to go through any of the information. They can't see through what's actually happening with the industry lobby groups.
Most people would have given up by now, Judy. How do you keep going?
Well, there's been many times when I have said no, I've done my bit, I'm giving up. And I guess I was just coming to that point in 2020. So I put my book out. I still had my newsletter. And, Anthony, I do believe that it was the newsletter that I started in 2012 when I suddenly realised I'm seeing all this information in the medical literature. There's no point in just me seeing it. I need other people to see what I'm seeing. Mm. And so I started copying friends and family into just open letters that I would send to government individuals or scientists, you know, at the Telethon Institute. And gradually people just started signing up. Mm. So
your newsletter is awesome. I love it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so that was 2012 and that just kept getting bigger. And it went global and I'd have people contacting me from various places. And I don't know if you are aware, but in 2016, the industry lobby groups attempted to get my PhD removed from Wollongong University through a petition.
Yeah, so
which is
that.
Completely inappropriate.
Mm. How dare they? How dare they?
Exactly. You know, it shows you the depths to which they needed to get rid of it. And, of course, the vice-chancellor of Wollongong University knew it had been through all the appropriate procedures and we had international examiners and he said, no, we're standing by that research. You know, so this is what people need to know. And, in fact, it's possible that it was only my newsletter that went global that actually allowed it to be my PhD to be approved in 2015 because they have been pushing out research projects that they don't want to be approved. They just push them out the back door, and if someone doesn't have a voice, then nobody's ever going to know.
Mm.
That because the official channels are now tied up by industry and they're not, it is corruption we're dealing with here.
At the highest level.
It is, because I've been to the highest levels and, the New South Wales Ombudsman, the Australian Federal Police, when an affidavit was leaked to the mainstream media, you know, a court document, these things, and there's no accountability.
No, none. Just going back to your rally in Coffs Harbour, what did you talk about?
I talked about the illusion, how they created an illusion that there was a disease called COVID, because most people are aware that there was no virus that was ever isolated. It's a genetic sequence, a genome sequence that's computer-generated. So the illusion was... So it's a flu-like illness, but you'll know that over those last 3 years, we nobody spoke about flu and colds or pneumonia.
There wasn't any.
All respiratory illness was now called COVID disease, and they claimed that the flu viruses had gone because of their public health measures. This sort of thing, and the people don't know what's true or not. I'll tell you what happened: the governments in all countries stopped monitoring and looking for flu viruses and the hundreds of coronaviruses and other rhinoviruses. There's hundreds of viruses that cause flu-like illness, as do bacteria, and even medications and vaccines can cause flu-like illness, those symptoms.
Mm.
But for 2 years, all flu-like illness was called coronavirus or COVID disease, actually. So the coronavirus is the supposed virus that caused the disease, and in this case specifically coronavirus 2019, which they claimed was a new mutated coronavirus. Well, you know, coronaviruses they cause the common cold. It's well known that 7 to 15% of respiratory viruses, there's a whole family of coronaviruses, and they cause the common cold.
Mm.
But they claimed this new mutated virus, and they were they provided a test which they claimed was identifying specifically for that one virus. Okay, so if you stop monitoring flu and pneumonia, bacteria and viruses, and only look for one of hundreds of causes of respiratory illness, you know, then you can give this appearance because the media, you know, in fact, if you remember, they were getting healthy people to line up at clinics to get themselves tested for supposedly this one virus, coronavirus 2019. When they had no symptoms,
yeah,
right? That's medical fraud. And they were then called a case of disease, people without symptoms. And that's how they frightened people with all these cases. The media wasn't providing any symptoms that these people had because they didn't have any. Hundreds of cases were being reported and they were just people that, you know, they were being called asymptomatic cases. But as I said before, anybody who's had a natural infection that doesn't have symptoms gives you immunity, long-term immunity. That's where the community herd immunity was developed from, asymptomatic and mild cases of a flu. So that's how they gave the appearance that everything was from COVID. They also in the hospitals, they reversed protocols. Because they claimed this was a virus causing the lung damage, instead of using antibiotics like they normally do, that's proven to cure and help these people, they started using antivirals, many of which were only provisionally approved, in other words, experimental, like remdesivir. And we know that remdesivir has huge side effects and has been killing and harming people. That's a fact, and many doctors are speaking out about it. But, of course, the mainstream media suppressed all of the opposition so that, you know, the government narrative just took over. And I will also point out that the vaccination programs that they ran in 2019, the flu vaccination programs, you know, in China, they mandated the flu vaccine for the first time ever in December 2019, and then round the world, every country did that in the aged care facilities. And you'll remember here in Australia, when it came to our winter, May 2020, not only were the residents and staff mandated for that flu vaccine, but also visitors. Now, flu vaccines cause neurological damage and flu-like illness, and they know that 3 weeks after these vaccination campaigns are run, they have a cluster of deaths and illnesses. And many elderly people will die with flu, but not from the flu. Okay, but also that the vaccine can harm elderly people's immune systems, and they get this cluster of death after the campaigns are run. What was happening was the media was publicising the deaths of these elderly people, and in any year, many elderly people die with the flu but not of the flu. On the death certificates, they usually put there's a primary cause and a secondary cause, and the primary cause was always the underlying health issue. If you remember, elderly people that were dying, they had comorbidities, you see. So, you know, they have cancers or diabetes or, you know, heart attacks or whatever, and prior to 2020, the primary cause was always their underlying comorbidity, and then they died with the flu. That was a secondary cause, but they reversed that. In 2020, the primary cause was called COVID disease, just based on this test that supposedly looked for one virus, and the secondary cause was their comorbidity. So with all these reversals in what we've done previously, they can give an illusion that people were dying more than in other years, when in fact we know now in 2020 there was no higher excess deaths, you know, from any illness, not even from COVID. The deaths to COVID were the same as the deaths in a normal year from flu and pneumonia.
The other thing that was interesting, essentially, simultaneously around the world, ivermectin was banned.
That's right, yeah. So there's another indication that they're not interested in human health. They weren't interested in promoting health. You don't ban a substance that's been around for decades and known to be mostly harmful if it can possibly help in a pandemic.
Let's use it.
I think Yeah, people need to start looking at the evidence and stop listening to the spin. This framing, it's all being framed to people in a way that's seducing them into believing something that's just not true. And, you know, in the entire 2 years or 3 years of this so-called pandemic, nothing changed in our environment around us. It's because people are locked into their TVs and the corporate-sponsored media. And that's the way in which they've turned things upside down. Black is white, and they can do that because the media protects politicians from being made accountable. People's reputations, as you can see with my reputation all over the internet, that is what prevents people speaking up. And politicians won't speak out if they know that the media will destroy their reputation. So there's many prongs to this issue. It's very complex, but it's all about controlling public behaviour through framing and false information that's all coming from the government. So this new legislation that's coming in, you know, at our conference, Anthony, you know, the question was asked, was there anything that the government said over the last 2 years that was true? And there's nothing. One of the doctors piped up and said, oh, his people died. But we all know they didn't die from COVID. You know, it wasn't COVID disease. Yeah, so there's literally everything that we've been told has been a lie. They weren't vaccines, they were untested drugs, and they weren't safe and effective. This is the problem we're dealing with, and it's the media that is the problem as much as the government.
You mentioned the new legislation. Are you talking about the misinformation?
That's correct. The legislation that the Albanese government, the Labor government, wants to push through to prevent mis and disinformation. Now, you know, this is in one way laughable because not only are you controlling free speech, but you're also academic freedom is being removed. That's scientific debate. And who's deciding what is mis and disinformation? You know, the government is making a law that is simply protecting itself because all government officials will be exempt from this law. And yet, you know, the public has only been lied to by the government for the last 2 years. So this is a really serious thing that's happening. I mean, you know, scientific debate is going to be completely removed if this law comes in.
So it's, as far as I can gather, it's targeting the social media. Does it extend to the mainstream media?
I imagine that it does. I haven't fully looked at all the legislation yet, but my understanding is that it's the platforms themselves that will be fined for allowing mis and disinformation. Now, for example, my newsletter used to be put out on MailChimp, and then in 2018, the CDC for infectious diseases in the US sponsored MailChimp and started funding it. And from then on, you know, they had control over the who was able to use that platform. And I was deplatformed from MailChimp in October 2020. Because I put out a newsletter that explained that proof of causality for COVID-19 disease had not been provided because they didn't use any scientific methodology to prove that only one virus was causing this respiratory illness that they were claiming. And that caused MailChimp to say that, you know, the information was against their policy, and that's all. And then they've been deplatforming anybody that's putting out, appropriate science for scientific debate.
So what platform do you use now?
Well, I had a friend here who was, I've been using WooCom for a while, but now I'm going to change to Substack because that's, one that's assisting people to put their information out without costing too much.
Yeah, I've just set up a Substack for the podcast for that reason.
Yes, and that's what I recommend everybody does now. Everybody that is aware of what's happened over the last 2 years, this creation of an illusion that is an attack on humanity and the spiritual being as well, everybody now needs to be putting out their own newsletters. Just set up an email list of people, and just be careful if, you know, if someone says they don't want to receive the information, you just immediately remove them, give them the option. And it's up to all of us now if we're going to, you know, give our children a future and, you know, create the community and society with values that we want to live by. It's very clear that this corporate structure that we're now in, they've removed all the values that we've grown up with for decades. Everything was violated. You know, if I could just say medical autonomy, informed consent to medications, and medical privacy, all violated, even though we had laws to protect us. Okay? So, If people are aware of these things now, then it's up to every individual to do something to ensure that they're educating as many people as possible around them. The ripple effect from the grassroots up is the way, because it's too rotten at the top.
I can remember going to one of the rallies in Adelaide. I had my four-year-old granddaughter on my shoulders, and we walked around the corner and there was a lot of people there, probably maybe 20,000, which was a lot for Adelaide. And she said, "Why are all these people here, Pop?" And I said to her, "They're here for you."
That's it. Yep. You asked me before what keeps me going, and I knew it was lies, and I thought, well, I can't leave a world of lies for my children. You know, I'd reached the highest level of the education system only to be denigrated and ridiculed by, you know, anybody who cared to do so. And we're in a bullying culture now. This name calling, comedians being allowed to just use anti-vaxxers as the butts of their jokes. The word anti-vaxxer is not even appropriate for a scientific discussion. I went to university to look at the risk benefit of each vaccine that was put on the program. And yet we have a government that has lumped all of these drugs into one word called a vaccine, and is allowing people to use the word anti-vaxxer to dismiss anybody who looks at the risk of these drugs. So if I could just encourage everybody to change the language, to remove the word vaccine from your discussion, talk about risk benefits of drugs, talk about an untested genetically engineered drug, and that framing helps people to recognise that no, you know, it wasn't the right thing to take an untested genetically engineered drug. See, the government have these very powerful media campaigns saying, do it for the community good, do the right thing, when in actual fact, an untested drug is not for the, yeah, it's the opposite. Everything is the opposite. So if people could just change their language, don't use the word vaccine. It is a genetically engineered injection, mRNA technology, untested. How could a drug that's only been tested for 2 months be claimed to be safe and effective?
I mean, for the world.
The holes in this, it is the emperor's new clothes. And as I said, I'd like to get back to the fact that the Therapeutic Goods Administration is 100% funded by the industry whose drugs have been approved, and it's responsible for monitoring their safety in the population. That is Scott Morrison's crime, because he set up or allowed this body to continue.
Isn't his brother part of the TGA? His brother?
His brother was the chair of APRA, the Australian Practitioners Regulatory Authority. So, there's so many rabbit holes to go into the corruption there. I will mention that APRA and the Fair Work Act of 2009, and there was another body that, with respect to the control of infectious diseases across Australia, was set up, the three bodies were set up in 2009 to be able to control the judges, the Fair Work Act 2009, to control the doctors, that was APRA, and to control all the advisors on infectious disease control in Australia. These were federal boards that were set up. But now we're even finding that APRA isn't even a government board. It's a completely corporate organisation, and this is what Dr. William Bay is now fighting in our High Court.
Just going back to the anti-vaxxer, if anyone calls me that, which they do, I say, are you using that in a derogatory manner, or are you congratulating me for my research?
Yes, that's it.
And they can't speak because they just walk away.
That's it. I'm glad you brought that up because the word anti-vaxxer is blocking people's critical thinking process. Mm. People are so desperate not to be called an anti-vaxxer that they'll start their conversation with "I'm pro-vaxxed," mm. and that they have shut down listening to anybody that wants to talk about the risk of these drugs or even the lack of benefit. You see, when you know. Science and medicine is based on looking at risk benefit of every drug. You know, it's the weight of evidence on both sides that is how you decide whether to use a drug or not, whether you're healthy or sick. But in this case, because we're healthy, it's even more important that we look at the risk benefit of each vaccine. Don't lump them together as all vaccines are the same. You know, let's look at if there's any benefit to some of them, but not all of them. But this has been a very clever ploy by the Murdoch-sponsored media now and government and the medical industry. You know, even when we looked at the AMA, the Australian Medical Association, which has been one of the strongest lobby groups for mandatory vaccination in this country, they only represented 26% of doctors. You know, this is an industry lobby group that is protecting industry interests in government policy. And the public's voice has been completely removed from this policy development.
Mm. You know, people listening to this are going to say, a couple of wackos there talking about vaccines. Why would the governments of the world do this?
That's right. And that's why I've tried to provide to you, Anthony, the pieces of the puzzle to show that there has been an agenda for population control. And it's come through the UN, actually. The UN was set up in the 1940s. And so the UN has been gradually over the decades leading up to this. It's about population control and surveillance. And they used vaccines because, you know, they've talked about overpopulation of the planet for a long time. So all I can say is that the evidence is there to support what we're saying, but the government spin and framing of all of this, there's no evidence supporting what they're doing, and that's why they won't debate us. They will never turn up to a public forum and debate us. If I could point out to listeners that in 2015, there was a parent who was doing media at the University of Technology in Sydney. She had three kids, and she asked me if I would participate in a debate with the government and medical practitioners and public authorities on the new no jab, no pay, play policies that were being brought in, and I said yes, I would. And she invited 45 government officials and doctors and public health experts, and you know this included Christian Porter and Susan Ley, the health minister. And as you know, this went through social services. That's why Christian Porter was invited, as was Scott Morrison, because he was responsible for tabling this document. And then all the doctors and policy advisors, 45 of them. Now, we went ahead with this debate despite the fact that they all declined to attend the University of Technology in Sydney to debate myself and another allied health professional. And so we presented the case, you know, from the public information that's on the government website, and then we presented the case of the ethics and medical guidelines on the public side as well. So that video is on my website.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is doing the same thing.
That's right. And you'll notice they never will come and debate in public. They don't. The only thing they do is smear our reputations and denigrate and ridicule with this bullying, anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist. But, you know, when you know that there's a body behind the World Health Organization called the Gavi Alliance that's directing and influencing global health policies, see, that's the evidence I'm asking people to investigate. And if they would also look at the World Economic Forum, which was the body that simulated what would happen if the world did have a global pandemic, and they did this simulation in October 2019, the World Economic Forum. And in it, they told governments how they should react if a pandemic was called. And lo and behold, by March 2020, a pandemic was called by the World Health Organization, despite the fact that most countries didn't have any disease in their country. And of course, a pandemic is when all countries have traditionally, it's been when all countries have an outbreak of disease that's causing enormous numbers of deaths and illnesses. So all of that change of definition and the fact that it was the pandemic was called based on a mathematical model, which of course is pseudoscience, because germs behave differently in each country according to the environment around them and the health of the individual. So this is what I'm asking people to actually listen to, look up the evidence for themselves, and recognise that it's been known throughout history that the governments, in collaboration with the media, can turn reality upside down, and that we are being lied to, and it's up to every one of us to do our own research on that and then start educating wherever they can.
So is there hope?
Absolutely, there's hope, because Anthony, this had to happen. The pharmaceutical companies had already got control of our children. 16 vaccines are listed on the National Immunisation Program, and they are, when the government mandated that and through social services, not health, in 2016, can I just emphasise that point? There's no scientific evidence to support mandatory vaccination. That's why Scott Morrison had to do it through social services. Mm. And what he was doing was bribing people with their lifestyles. Money is totally being used to drive this whole show. If people are really interested in this, if they look up Scott Morrison's policy in 2015, he called it Choices for Families. Mm. And he was removing people's choice to decide how many vaccines they put into their child. This is George Orwell. We're in George Orwell's times, and they always knew that the propaganda media can be used with government to prevent governments being accountable for the lies they're telling. Once people start looking into the politics of this issue, they'll realise that it's not about science. It's about doctors being bribed to give vaccines back in the 1990s. It's about Michael Waldridge as the health minister in 1996 merging public health, which is preventative health, under the umbrella of medical science so that the media and government could tell people to only get their information on infectious diseases from a medical doctor, right? Mm. And that's where I, as a public health expert, which looks at, political and economic decisions to improve health, a government doesn't have a jurisdiction to medicate the population. It's all been breached. Yeah. So pseudoscience is being used globally now in this false term of global health policies. That in itself is an oxymoron, because global health policies aren't possible because all of our environments and genetics in each country and quality of healthcare, as I said before, varies from country to country, and genetics is a huge thing in how any bacteria or microorganism affects the individual, and it's the same with a drug. A drug will affect everybody differently because of our family history and genetics. And what the government's done is just arbitrarily remove genetics from that equation to say that, well, everybody can have a vaccine.
I think the majority of people kind of think there's something weird going on in the world at the moment, but a lot of them just don't want to know anymore. They just want to bury their heads in the sand, it would appear.
That's right. They are being lulled back in because the government wants people to be complacent at the moment. The World Health Organization's amendments will, if we don't reject them as a country by November 2023, this year, then they will be adopted for next year. And that's when the next part of the plan comes in, and that's your vaccine passports to travel anywhere, your digital IDs and your digital currency, which will also help to control the population. So they want people to just fall asleep and to just think, oh, life's back to normal. You know, and that's the seductive nature of this corporate structure that we're in. You know, we all want to enjoy our lives and just get on with it. And also, I'll tell you the other main reason, Anthony. People need to be visible because they're not seeing. People are too frightened to speak up now. Groupthink has taken over. And people don't want to be called an anti-vaxxer, an ostracised. So I can only say to everybody, you need to come out from under the surface and stop protecting your jobs. Be strong. There are enough people now that are aware of all of these lies that you will be supported. And the key now is to be visible in your opposition, to speak up and tell people about the side effects of these drugs and the premature deaths that are occurring. You know, don't be frightened, be visible, and that's the way we turn this back upright. But it's only through visibility now. That's how mass formation forms. And, you know, the fact that they've suppressed us to such a degree is the reason why we're not getting traction, because many, many people are protecting their jobs.
Yeah, that's right, because they've got giant mortgages. With regards to the WHO, you know, this is an unelected body that's so far from removed from Australia, it's now going to govern how we behave.
That's exactly right. The new amendments coming through, what happened in 2020, it was interesting because those directives in the pandemic preparedness plans were non-binding. But you notice that the majority of countries put them in, even though they were the opposite to how our own country's pandemic preparedness plans told you to control a disease. You don't use the most draconian methods first. Now, the reason most governments reversed it and put in these draconian methods was because they were that money, they were being paid to do it. They received money and other ways in which they were controlled that made them put these directives in place, even though it was the opposite to our own pandemic preparedness plans.
So our governments are as controlled as us, and there's nothing they can do about it.
That's correct. This is all being driven by money. But now the difference is the amendments being made will make those directives binding. Okay, so whereas they were non-binding, but unfortunately our governments were bribed to put them in place as of November onwards and next year, 2024, they will be binding directives whereby the director of the World Health Organization can declare a pandemic, and it can even be a potential pandemic, as we saw with, you know, 2020, but you know, they just have to declare a potential pandemic, and they will have control of our government structure to put in place whatever directives they wish. And as we saw, it removed bodily autonomy, it removed medical privacy, and so forced medications and vaccine passports are on the way if we don't reject the World Health Organization. We don't need that structure. I don't know if you're aware, Anthony, of the World Council for Health, but that is a new body that has set up that takes the place of the World Health Organization. Dr. Tess Laurie is one of the main doctors in that organization. So we need to reject and remove ourselves from the WHO and go back to designing public health policies for Australia by the Australian government. And then with respect to the global situation, the World Council for Health has provided a structure by which, you know, we can keep all communities safe. So we're not dependent upon the World Health Organization. It is a corrupt body, and we soon will have a one world government if we don't reject that.
That's a tiny bit frightening, isn't it?
It is frightening, but it is also hopeful because, as I said, the communities are already building up. There's so many aware people where we're already – what you need – you know, we don't want to be – people need to stop being dependent upon the government for money. We need to ensure that we're not dependent upon corporations and these corporate platforms for communicating. So we've now got lots of new independent media setting up, such as the Light newspaper and TNT radio. If people could download the app for TNT radio, you know, you can go back to listening to some balanced news, you know, on all political issues. So these things are happening, and even in our local communities, we're connecting up, and, you know, the health hubs are forming. I recommend that people go to CoVision to get some of this information and to know how to connect in, but even food-wise and things like that. We need to get onto the farmers now to stop them injecting the cattle and sheep with this new legislation that forces them to use the mRNA injections if they're going to use the cattle yards. And the, you know, this has to be stopped. It's a poisoning of the animals and ourselves with these drugs. And as I said, it's visibility, but the hope is in the new communities building. So just if people could connect into those communities and start getting their employment and food and health and all the rest of it, we've got to extract ourselves from the corporate structure that's been built up.
The World of Wellness, that's another good one.
Brilliant. Ian Brighthope has been a ray of hope. I love his name.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I came across him over a decade ago, and the Australasian College of Nutritional Environmental Medicine was what he set up 40 years ago, and he's been fighting these issues from a medical perspective for that length of time. So, yes, we need to educate people to understand how environmental factors and nutritional factors are the key to controlling all diseases, actually, infectious diseases and chronic illnesses, etc. This is the key. But, you know, people talk about alternative health. In actual fact, it's natural health, you know, nutrition. And, you know, environmental factors, the terrain is more important than the organism, because we live in harmony with these organisms. We're ecological environments, and they have to be in balance. So most people will know we've got millions of bacteria and viruses in us all the time, and we don't get sick because they're in balance. So this is where people need to understand that it's the terrain that's most important, your nutrition, your stress levels that causes illness, your hygiene, sanitation. And because we live in a developed country, we're actually not at risk from any pandemic. And that was the sad thing. When they turned all of that upside down and started to use cases instead of hospitalizations and death as the measure for a pandemic, when in fact, Anthony, you know that Australia closed its borders before there was any disease in the country whatsoever. Mm. You know, that's false science. It's called pseudoscience. And it makes the population sicker, not healthier. That's the problem we have. So we do need everybody to start educating it, but move into these new communities, connect up, go to the stand in the parks regularly so you know who you can get in touch with to get new employment and not be dependent upon the government and the big tech companies and corporations.
I saw an interview that you did recently, and you said that courage is the cure.
Yes. We've got some freedom media here, and that's her motto. And okay. I just thought, how fantastic. That's exactly it. Courage is a cure. And you're on, you know, by standing up bravely, this is actually the Emperor's New Clothes. You're just standing up for everything you've been taught all your life. For decades, we've lived by the Nuremberg Code. You don't experiment on the population. We've lived by informed consent to medications. And that's why I know we will win, Anthony, because, you know, it's the medical ethics and guidelines that have been turned upside down. We're living in an immoral society, and that has to collapse. You know, that breeds sickness and death. And all we need is people to come out from under the surface and stand up for their human rights that we've ratified in all the international human rights covenants. And the reason that medical doctors and have ethical guidelines and principles is because that's the only way you can promote health. anything else is promoting sickness. Mm. So the medical industry itself is now a sickness industry because of all the conflicts of interest and the number of drugs they're pushing. And this is becoming more and more obvious to people all the time. So the respect for those doctors will decrease as we all move into our new health hubs, where we will look at preventative health and we will call it natural health, not alternative health. These are the things we need to live by. We need to start setting up our own values and principles that we want to live by, the ones we've always been educated to think exist. Mm. And that's why we will turn this upright eventually.
Mm. Well, you're definitely living by that courage. And we need more people like you. I think that maybe when my grandchildren are older, they'll see a statue of you in a park somewhere.
Well, yeah, I hope that it does get exposed soon. And, it really, in the end, it's not bravery. Certainly I never thought of it as bravery because it was knowledge. And that's what hit me in 2020. People can't fight what they don't know. Mm. Once you can see that all you're doing is supporting all the ethical guidelines and principles that enable people to be healthy and to enjoy society and to live together, then there's no bravery needed. And it's just essential that people become visible in this and start spreading the word themselves, because it is going to come down. It's a criminal activity, a huge crime against humanity. And I think it's just the emperor's new clothes. We just have to reverse the framing so that people have, I reckon, 99% of people want to live by informed consent to all medications. Mm. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. So in the end, it's probably not bravery, it's just knowledge. And I hope that many others can start speaking up as well.
Well, I'm definitely grateful for you. And I was glad to meet you a couple of years ago at an evening talk. We had a hug. You probably don't even remember me.
But that's great. Wondered, yeah, no, I do.
Yep. Do you get any time to just sit down and read a novel or go in your garden, or are you just flat out?
At the moment, I must say over the last 3 years, I've been pretty flat out. And you see, that when you said, do I ever feel like giving up? I actually, when MailChimp deplatformed me in 2020, I actually, sigh of relief. I thought, great, I've done everything I can. I don't have to worry. I'm going to go and live my life. But, of course, that was the time everyone was waking up. And so I kept getting more platforms to get it out. And I thought, well, this is the time. I've got to take all these opportunities. So I did take all those opportunities, and I have missed out on a little bit of that being able to live a normal life. But I can see it coming. I'm already feeling the change, Anthony. There's lots of people stepping up, and the discussion is changing in our communities. People are recognising something's not right and that it's up to them to change it. So I will be looking forward to some time soon.
I hope that you get it.
Yes. Yeah. No. I've got it planned, and how I'll gradually step back now because I'm seeing so many people step up, and for mental health reasons, I think we all have to do this just to keep balance.
Yeah. It's a big thing to navigate, isn't it?
It's huge. It's huge. But I felt I had to take it over the last couple of years and throw in everything I could because I did have the knowledge, and. Yes, it seems to be paying off. And as I said, when you think about it, COVID had to happen because we needed to get more people aware. When we were fighting just the children's program, it was only the parents with kids that were interested in picking up the issue. And because the media wouldn't give us a voice and we were removed from the political arena as well, nothing was ever going to change. And the kids' health... chronic illnesses in kids, as I said, 50% now of 0 to 14-year-olds have a chronic illness, many of which are life-threatening. And this does include asthma and allergies and everything. The end point of that is anaphylaxis. Mm. Charles Rickett was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1913 for causally linking vaccines to anaphylaxis. We've known these things for a long time and they've been ignored. So COVID brought the awareness to the community that we now need to pick up on and to continue to make sure we make the real change that we need, which is that all medications, and particularly for healthy people, it is our choice what we put in our body, because there's no life worth living if a government can destroy your quality of life by choosing what they inject into your body. So there's no giving up, and all the right things are happening, I believe, to pull this charade down.
Oh, well, that's good news.
Yes, yeah. The pseudoscience is being exposed at every level.
Well, Judy, thank you very much for agreeing to chat to me.
Great, yeah. No, I've loved chatting with you, Anthony, and it also brightens my spirits every time I know that someone's happy to help get this out. So, yeah, thank you for doing what you're doing.
Well, hopefully if there's any new developments soon, we can have another chat.
Absolutely. Very happy to do that. Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony.
No worries. See you later.